The podcast you're about to listen to is a conversation between myself, Vicky Mason-Angelo from NDTI, Ruth Haslam and Iqra Shakur, two young people from Time to Talk Next Steps. Our conversation focuses on how we work together to co-produce the evaluation of Time to Talk Next Steps. We talk about how this co-production came about, how we did it, what we learned, the challenges we faced, and what we would recommend for people looking to do this work in the future.
Today we're going to be reflecting together about the co-production and evaluation training which Ruth, Iqra and Asha have been involved with. I'm here today with Ruth, Iqra and Vicky speaking on what went well and what we could have done better. How are you doing today, Vicky?
I'm doing okay, thank you. How are you?
Quite well, thank you. I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about what's been going on behind the scenes. How are you doing today, Iqra?
I'm doing okay, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. And Ruth?
Yeah, I'm okay. A bit tired, but good. Right. Excited to be on this call to talk a bit about what's going on.
100%. Well, I suppose to kick things off, Vicky, how did the co-production of the evaluation for Time to Talk Next Steps come about?
All of our evaluation work at NDTI is co-produced or co-designed to a greater or lesser extent. It's one of the things we like to do in all of our projects. Obviously, it's not possible in some of them due to time, length of the project, funding that's available. Whatever we do, however much co-production that we can do, we always like to engage with people right at the start of an evaluation piece in a vision for change or outcomes framework session. Sure, sure. Those are really the two guiding documents that we work from in evaluation. So it helps us to understand as the evaluators, whether it's a project being run by NDTI or an external client, it helps us as the evaluation team to come in and understand what the hopes, aspirations are of a project. So we create the vision. And then underpinning that vision is the outcomes that the project's hoping to achieve. And from that, we can start to tease out, how are we going to know that we're starting to achieve those outcomes? What evidence is there that this program that's being delivered is achieving those outcomes? And from that, we can create the different protocols, we call them, but different ways of getting information from people and helping people engage with the evaluation. So that might be a survey that people fill in, might be conversations that they're going to have with us about what that project's been like. So all of that happened right at the start of Time to Talk Next Steps back in July 2021. Feels like a very long time ago now. And in those sessions, I ran online because obviously we're still in the midst of COVID. We had people from the lottery who funded the project. We had all the delivery staff who were involved with Time to Talk Next Steps at that point, because there's been new members of staff join along the way. And there were some young people. I think both Ruth and Iqra were present at those sessions. And there were some family members as well that were involved in that. And we helped create a vision for change and we did the outcome framework for that. And so throughout year one, we were using all of those protocols that we created in that first session to try and capture the learning from people that had been supported by Time to Talk Next Steps, whether that was young people themselves or their family members who were receiving support from Contact. And we got to the end of year one and we all got together. There was a big celebration event at Drayton Manor where we celebrated the first year and we shared all the learning. And what we realised was actually we weren't learning a lot. Because not many people were engaging with the evaluation. There were many reasons for that. Quite a lot of them were assumptions that we made as to why people just weren't engaging with us. The beauty of Time to Talk Next Steps is it's not processy. There aren't forms. People don't require a diagnosis. It's very straightforward for people to request some support and then to get some online. Evaluation, by its very nature, is quite processy, and there's quite there's forms that people have to fill in, there's information sheets, and I think there was a little bit of it didn't rub along together very well. At the end of year one, when we were together in Drayton Manor, it was decided that actually we need to look at this, like, how do we get young people in particular to engage with the evaluation? And so the idea was born that going into year two, myself and my colleague Lauren, in the research and evaluation team at NDTI would develop and deliver some evaluation training to some young people who would help us then, once they had the training, to understand evaluation and why we do the things we do, what sits underneath it all, to help us redesign the evaluation so we got more young people engaged, and so that we could really capture the voices of young people in the evaluation, because the impact of Time to Not Next Steps is immense on young people's lives, and we wanted to hear that from young people themselves.
Definitely a very co-production sort of geared program in itself, so it makes sense that the evaluation is along those lines too. I suppose usually from my experience, evaluations are sort of done by people within the organization and not necessarily sort of a co-produced thing. I guess what I'd like to understand is, what is new about this new approach, particularly for NDTI and for yourself?
Well, I think at NDTI, we, as I say, we try to co-produce all of our evaluation. Mm-hmm. We have in the past had peer evaluators where there has been some training along the way to help people to understand the purpose of what we're doing. But that's never been in the formal sense of training. It's been as people are going, what do they need to know to be able to go out and work in their local areas. Quite often we recruited people, particularly older people in NDTI's history, to go out and be peer evaluators in an area and capture information from people, because we don't have the capacity to do that. So we've provided them with the "this is how we want you to do it" training, making sure that they're behaving ethically and keeping themselves safe. But we've never developed a training program before. So that was something that was different for us in sure. the evaluation team. And it's certainly something that we've not done historically with young people either. So it's really broadened out our way of working and in the type of project that this is, working with young people. And I know we're going to touch on it later, but it's led to some really exciting developments for us as a team and as an organisation.
Awesome stuff. I suppose it'd be good to dive into some of the challenges and some of the positive aspects of this new approach. I'd quite like to ask you this first, Vicky, and then perhaps mm-hmm. we can hear some commentary, some sort of feedback from both Ikra and Ruth. What was good about working this way in particular?
It felt very much like we were learning together, bringing our experts, like I was bringing the evaluation, this is why we do it, the underpinning stuff, the theories that sit behind it, the ethical frameworks that guide how we work. But working with Asha and Ruth and Ikra, I was learning the conversations that we had in those training sessions and afterwards and in between things. I was learning as well. It wasn't they were coming to work in our team. I was giving all of the information and then that was it. It was a two-way thing. Because we got to know each other and have those conversations, I think we were able to, as much as was possible, pick up the bits that people wanted to do. So I know that I worked with Asha to do the ethics form, because that's something they were really interested in. And I know that both Ikra and Ruth have helped host some focus groups. We were able to pick up on bits of the evaluation process that people were interested in and where their skills were. And that really, I mean, it aided our capacity to do things as well within the team and to reach more young people. So I don't know. Ruth, do you have anything you'd like to add into that about what was good about working in this way from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the discussion that we had really provided insight into the accessibility as well and trying to make it work, because that was one of the things we faced, trying to create learning that was accessible. And mm-hmm. I think that was a really good learning curve for me, especially in seeing how we could work together to help make the evaluations accessible.
What kind of things did you do to make sort of it more accessible?
We did a lot of evaluations in person with people when we were on away days to ensure it was easier to give feedback instead of filling out forms, as forms could be quite pressuring and could be really difficult for people to do. This just provided people with an opportunity to meet up with one another and also the opportunity to receive the feedback that was essential for moving forward to prove impact.
Mm-hmm.
And it had really interesting conversations along the way of trying to make it accessible to learn as well, for like the PowerPoints being sent out early, pre-warning, and then also just trying to work alongside everyone who was involved to ensure that no one was being burnt out, which was really important and really well done.
It sounds like it's a very useful thing to do, to sort of give people alternative ways of giving feedback in that way. Mm-hmm. I quite like that there is a sort of a one-to-one element of it, and you know, it's not necessarily like come and fill out the form. And also the fact that, you know, I think a lot of evaluations that I've seen, you know, they tend to be very sort of in a group, and you know, sometimes people don't always get the chance to speak as much as they would want to. Ikra, I know that Vicky mentioned something about the focus groups. Do you want to speak a little bit more about what those focus groups were like for you?
Yeah, we ran like the focus group. One was for the peer support group, which was done online, which was run by myself, Ruth, and Vicky. Like, we had three questions that we asked the young people what they found positive about Time to Talk, Next Steps, peer support group, what can be better. And I think that was like one of the focus groups that was successful, I think, because like young people don't really like doing like questions there, because like you don't want to sit there and fill a 20-30 questions in, because sometimes it can make you feel overwhelmed filling a questionnaire in. And I think having a focus group, having a discussion with them young people, it was like beneficial to get that research. And then we also did a focus group for freshmen. We also did another focus group in person. I think it was at Legoland. I think from all the focus group, we got like a good reset and data to see like how well it's going and what can be improved. So from doing the focus group, I thought it was just like another way of getting the reset and evaluation, because normally other services you only have a questionnaire to fill in, and yes, most of the time you just don't want to do it, because when you look at the questions you just get overwhelmed. And then also we had another idea of turning the questionnaires, like just having like five questions and just having emojis. So in a way, like if you don't want to fill the whole questionnaire in, you could just do the emojis, so you could get your evaluation that way as well.
I think it's really great sort of having that focus group element to things, because I think that, you know, as you said, sometimes filling in a form can be quite overwhelming for some people. And also, I think it doesn't necessarily capture all of the sort of emotions. You know, you don't get to ask feedback questions. You know, it's quite often, I think, an important aspect of getting sort of feedback from people. How was the focus group with the professionals?
I thought it was interesting, and it was just like we saw the difference between like the young people, the professionals, and the parents and carers.
Mm-hmm.
And the evaluation, you could see like the differences. There were also like one-to-one interviews with the professionals.
How was that?
It was okay, I can say. it's a long time going back.
Yes, yeah. Well, thank you very much for that, Ikra. Vicky, would you like to add anything else onto what Ruth and Ikra have been talking about?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that the difference in the data that we got from people by having Ruth and Ikra involved in talking to people, especially with the young people, that element of sharing with a peer rather than, you know, us in the evaluation team being another grown up that kind of falls into a you could be a professional camp.
Yes.
And you know, we've been nothing to do with Time to Talk, Next Steps. We've been at no delivery. We're just somebody that pops up at the end of the support and go, can you tell us how it was? And people not wanting to not wanting to talk to us, or if they do, being quite guarded with us, and understandably so. So it's, yeah, the benefit of having a peer having that conversation has added to the richness of the data we've got. We've got more of it, and you know, it's of a very different quality to the stuff that I've been capturing when I've been doing it on my own. So it's been invaluable in that respect.
Well, that's great to hear. That's awesome. I suppose, you know, now that we've kind of touched on some of the benefits of this new way of working, this new approach, I'd like to know a little bit more about perhaps some of the challenges and some of the takeaways, some of the learning experiences that you might have had through this process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's one of the things that really helped with being able to do this was the time and the flexibility that the National Lottery Community Fund afforded us to be able to do this, you know, to completely change things in year two and recreate or create a new training package and a new approach. Mm-hmm. But it also, there wasn't enough time to do it well. I'm really aware of it felt quite rushed at points, and the budget available to do it. Again, I think to do it, we could have done it if we had more money. Always the way, I guess, isn't it? If you had a little bit more money, you could do it differently and do it better. But I think we did quite well for what we had. But I think one of the biggest challenges was our own time. For those of us that said that we were doing this, there were lots of bumps in the road with health for you know, lots of us that were involved. There were things that meant it got delayed, which then meant that people had new commitments, because the world, as we were doing this, the world was opening up again. Mm-hmm. And people were going to college and university and work. And so actually fitting, doing the training in to make sure that everyone was starting from the same point when it was coming to redesign the ways we were going to collect information from people, that was really challenging. Like trying to juggle calendars and just getting it all to work, I think was the biggest challenge from, you know, from my perspective. But I'm sure that Ruth and Ikra have had their own reflections on that.
So it's kind of the organizational aspect of it, and sort of meshing everything together.
Yeah.
I imagine that's something that's, you know, going to prop up, particularly when it comes to sort of new approaches, new way of doing things. I suppose what I'd really like to know is the experience of Ikra and Ruth on the challenges that may have come up for them sort of during the process. Ikra, do you have anything to add on that? Any of your own sort of personal experiences?
Yeah. I think the time, it felt like rust a bit, I can say. Just do like a long session or one day. We could have done it like split, like the training in half. Mm-hmm. So it could have been much more easier. After like an hour, my focus goes. After a bit, I'll be like, it was too much. I think in the future, if you do it again, I think the training sessions should be split into like half. People might have different stuff going on and like your focus goes. I think that's one of the challenges. Yeah, also like timings, it was a bit too rough, I think. Mm-hmm. That's two of my concerns were.
So trunking it up perhaps, and all splitting it up into a bit shorter sessions, perhaps maybe a couple, kind of thing. How did you find sort of fitting it into your schedule?
It was a bit hard, like, because uni was started, and then when you had like assignments due in, it was just sometimes it was just like hard to fit everything in. But if you have a plan to follow and you can balance stuff, but it was still like hard, because due to my side, it's like doing a lot in one day, it just makes it too tired.
It's important to feel kind of calm and cool and collected to get the most out of those in-person kind of one-to-one group sessions. Yeah,
yeah.
I see that. Ruth, Was there any challenges when it came to doing sort of the days, doing the interviews, doing the evaluation aspect of it, like the practical sort of, did you find it to be difficult in some fashion or something that you might have want changed a little bit?
So on the day interviews, there weren't too many, actually. I think it was quite a small number. I mean, I don't have an excellent memory, but I can remember Leeds. And that went very well for me because we had had previous meetings with young people from Time to Talk Next Steps, and they had taken feedback from the prior sessions about providing enough space for people to unwind from the travel before going into a meeting. So I felt that that had been taken on board very well. So when I did attend that one, there was a lot more gaps in between arriving, going to your room, having some food before starting on anything else, which was really important to me because I remember one of the first times was incredibly stressful, and I'd actually had to take myself off into a corner just to go relax because it was so overstimulating, all the sensory input. But I think it was really well done taking that into consideration. I think there's a difficulty with any job in trying to kind of fit it in, especially as this was extra opportunity and not kind of the main priority in people's lives. So I think that's a difficulty with any added on opportunity, but it was well worth it. Yeah, I really liked the learning and opportunities.
It was very sort of adaptable. You know, they took feedback on very quickly, and very strange, isn't it? Sometimes like the most helpful things are the sort of the small sort of details, isn't it, around what happens as you were talking about with, you know, sort of getting used to the environment, getting used to the people.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things, was that thankfully we were all quite an outspoken group, which came in handy because there were comments we had about, like I said earlier, the PowerPoints being sent beforehand for the learning, or needing that rest break when arriving. And it was taken on board and all feedback was taken very seriously to ensure that anyone participating was prioritised, their health and mental health wouldn't get affected significantly. But obviously it was a balance because not all of us could manage it at the time. So a lot of us had health. I mean, I have tiredness and fatigue problems. So it was always difficult to manage that and arriving on time to sessions, but they were always very willing to support with sending the PowerPoints if I missed it by accident, and any recordings and information, which was always very useful to catch up with.
I'm hearing, you know, the importance of being sort of adaptable and sort of changing things around just to make it a bit easier. What kind of takeaways do you think that you would have from this kind of whole experience, Ruth? Is there anything that you can speak on which kind of, I suppose, encapsulates some of the learning experiences that you've had?
The overall learning was really useful. I learned a lot about the process of putting in your hours to try and get the financing, which was really difficult, but was a skill that could be easily, which was a universal skill that could apply to many jobs, which I'm still learning even today. And then trying to manage time. It was provided a lot of opportunity to grow and learn as an individual and in kind of our work setting, which was really useful.
And what about you, Karen? Do you have any sort of learning experiences that you could take away from the experiences that you've had in this the co-produced evaluation?
I think overall learning, like before doing this training, I hated these methods. And now it's like I like them. And also it's like I have learned a lot that I can take and use for my own. No one gives you them skills, how to do evaluation, the research or anything like that. And I thought doing this, having that opportunity, I have learned a lot, and I'm going to, like, for future, it's going to be very beneficial, I can say.
What sort of transferable skills that you've learned through the experience?
Not always questionnaires useful in a way.
Yeah.
there's different ways. Like, I think the emojis, using the emojis, you can still get your research, and I like the idea. And also, like, there's so many different ways of research can be done. And I think other services and organisations should adapt to that.
Well, thank you very much for that, Ikra. I suppose for Vicky, obviously there's been some, both a lot of benefits and a lot of sort of new sort of unseen challenges and that you've had to work through and adapt to. What I'd really love to know is, particularly for yourself or for NDTI, what have you learned from working this way, and what kind of learning experiences have you taken away from this?
I think on a really practical basis, it's helped us and challenged us to think about not just using questionnaires, as you say, Ikra. You know, it doesn't always have to be a questionnaire, and they get used so often because you can get a lot of information very quickly. It doesn't cost a lot in your budget to do that, but if it's not appropriate, then you don't use it as a method. And we are using questionnaires in Time to Talk Next Steps, but what we've learned is actually you need to put them within the support sessions so that they're not something that someone gets emailed to you a week after you finished the support and it just gets lost and you don't want to fill it in. That actually has been working really well, and we've translated that into other projects. So there was Time to Talk Next Steps in Scotland, which is a pilot version of Time to Talk Next Steps, but delivered in Scotland. So the learning that came from working in this part of Time to Talk Next Steps is directly affected what we did in Time to Talk Next Steps in Scotland, which was really useful and meant that we got a lot of really interesting data there. So on a practical basis, we've learned different ways of working and that we need to have different people working alongside us and influencing the work that we're doing. And with that in mind, we have developed a programme of evaluation training on the used the pilot that we did with Time to Talk Next Steps. We have developed a program now which we're going to be launching in June, towards the end of June, that we can embed into all of our other projects, whether that's within direct evaluation projects that we're running in the R&E team, or whether other colleagues in NDTI can start to think about embedding into their work, and people can commission us to do it as well. Because we've realised that it's something that we can do. And it sounds like, and I'm really glad that Ruth and Ikra feel that it has been valuable, because this is the first time we've had this conversation, but we feel it's valuable. And, you know, to share the knowledge and to embed evaluation into people's thinking is really useful for all sorts of reasons, but certainly from an evaluation perspective. If people are thinking about it before they commission us to do the work, then it just makes all of that easier. The impact of being able to do this within Time to Talk Next Steps is going to reach far and wide and outlive the Time to Talk Next Steps programme, which has been, you know, really unexpected and wasn't on the cards back in July 2021 when we started the evaluation. It's been brilliant.
Well, it sounds like there's been a lot of sort of benefits and sort of learning experience both for yourself and the team at NDTI, but also for the young people that you've been co-producing with as young evaluators. For anybody who is listening to this podcast, where can they go if they want to learn more about the training or sort of the development that you'd be doing, and when will that be available to people?
It is going to be launched at the Away Days on the 18th of June. So it's called Learning Together. And on the 18th of June, there will be a web page that's launched. And I think there'll be a link to it from where this podcast is on our website. It will be on that same page. There'll be a link so people can have a look at that and then get in touch and have a conversation with us about it if it's something they're interested in.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for that. I think one sort of last question that I'd want to sort of pose to you all. I suppose I'm looking for some top things that you might want to sort of communicate to other people on working this way in terms of co-produced evaluation. Perhaps maybe one of the important things from each person. Vicky, would you like to go first on this?
Yeah, okay. I had a list of three. I've got to think which one I want to say.
I mean, you're very welcome to go.
No, I think the most important one for me is having the confidence to learn together with your trainees.
Mm-hmm.
To give up some of the power that's in the traditional relationship of that. And especially within, you know, there's a lot of power dynamics in evaluation. And I think it's having the confidence in yourself as the person who has a job in evaluation, who's sharing the knowledge that it is a two-way street and that you're learning together. It's not just you imparting information.
I think that's very important to highlight when it comes to co-production of any kind, you know, sharing that sort of decision-making. What about you, Ikra?
I don't know if it's a top tip or not, whatever it comes, but I'm going to say asking any question, if you don't know, you should ask back, because then you know, and no question is a silly question. I started, as you said, evaluation, young person. I did not know anything about you said, and even at that time, I thought a question was silly, but Ricky and Lauren would be like, no, nothing's silly, so ask as many questions as you want, and I found that very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you very much for that, Ikra. And Ruth, do you have a top thing that you'd like to share with people about working on this evaluation?
I think the co-production of the evaluation meant that more questions could be asked that were relevant, because it was relating to the young people who had been a part of it from the beginning. And I guess my top tip would be to acknowledge you might not know everything, and to kind of do a yes and see what the opportunities are to learn more, because that's always a really joyful thing. I think it's always great to be able to acknowledge you don't know something about a topic, or you might not know much about someone's experience, and being able to have that opportunity to learn more is, I think, a privilege.
So it's not just getting the quantitative data sort of down on paper. It's also about trying to understand where that comes from.
Just trying to create that ability for everyone to join in on the feedback, and that space for everyone to feel comfortable in.
Well, I'm going to come to Vicky. Do you have any last sort of tips that you'd like to share? I know that you said you had about two or three, so it would be... It'd be really great to hear if you have any other sort of pieces of advice.
Yeah, I think the others I had written down were that you need to be flexible in your approach. I think that's quite clear from a conversation that we've had today, that if you're, you know, if you're the person that's going to be sort of running it from an evaluation within a project, and you're bringing people in to train them, you have to be flexible and, again, willing to learn. We only know what we know, and it's being open to finding out about what you don't know and changing your approach and adapting. And if you're not able to do that, then bringing someone in to help you support to do that. And but actually, really, this is so often people get brought in as an expert by experience and expect to be thrown in because of that experience, which isn't necessarily within evaluation. To bring somebody in who doesn't have the experience and expect them to be able to just go in and do it and do it well and understand why they're doing it, that's not fair. So this should be embedded when you're writing bids, and you need to make sure that there's the appropriate amount of time and appropriate amount of money to do that. And be pushing back to funders if there's not that there, but they're saying they want to see co-production and co-design, but there's no budget and time for it, then I think we need to be better at doing that from the, you know, when we respond to bids out there, to make things sure that things are properly funded and resourced with time, because that's something I guess we haven't mentioned that was really important about this. And again, I'm really grateful to the lottery for allowing it to happen, so that Ikra, Ruth and Asha were all paid a proper rate for doing this. They were paid a rate for receiving the training and then for actually delivering the evaluation work. And again, that's, you know, is how it should be, but it's not always the case.
It's about sort of not just throwing people in, but giving them the skills, equipping them with the right sort of skills and knowledge in order to do the job properly, to know how to sort of navigate it, and also in terms of the funds and sort of the time available to make that a smooth process.
Yeah.
Well, brilliant. It's been absolutely fabulous to talk to you all about your experiences with this new approach, and it sounds like something that's has been very, very, very beneficial in your work, and I imagine that it will be beneficial for other organizations to take on. I do remember that you said that it's going to be released on sort of the 18th of June, and it's going to have some notes below the podcast if anyone who's listening wants to follow that up and see what it's about. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you all.
Thank you. You too.
Many thanks, yeah.
All righty. See you later.
Okay. Bye. Thank you. We hope that you enjoyed listening to our conversation and that you found it useful. As I mentioned at the end of the conversation with Thomas, at NDTI, we have developed and now launched some evaluation training that you might be interested in commissioning from us, or simply having a conversation with us about what it is and how you might be able to use it. If you're interested, please follow the links on the website where this podcast is listed and get in touch.